joining us now there with Mike and Todd, the president of the PGA of America, Paul Levy, joins us. Paul, welcome into the Golf Shop.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here and kind of great to be in Charlotte, North Carolina this weekend for our championship.
Yeah, through two rounds, a little weather problem yesterday afternoon, but so far it seems like not only the golf course, but the city of Charlotte representing the PGA of America proud.
Well, I can tell you this. We're all in, you know, when you say things like this, people say, well, you'd say that anywhere. I've been coming to the PGA Championship for quite some time, and this has been a special week. The people of Charlotte, Quail Hollow, Johnny Harris, everything that they've done to get behind this tournament, and, of course, you know, they've had years of practice with a great event called the Wells Fargo, but we're excited to be here. And the support of everyone is off the chart, not to mention good old Southern hospitality and food.
Well, and it's a knowledgeable golf base, I mean, which has to help, almost like hockey in Detroit. You've got knowledgeable fans. Does that make a difference in Charlotte?
Oh, I think so, because you've got people who've been coming to the Wells Fargo for years, and I think that does make a difference. And that's kind of like getting to prep for many years for a major championship. So I think when it comes to the volunteers, the fan base, and they're all cordial and they all respect the game.
Yeah, now, as it's playing out, weather has been part of the story, but if you look at that leaderboard, it's not going to be the story.
No, I think when it's all said and done, and you look at the scores still, I mean, you know, 8-under leading, I don't know if the score is going to go too low. It depends on what the weather does this weekend. I mean, you know, the greens yesterday, I heard, were a little more receptive than they were the first day.
Okay.
And so, you know, we might get some more drizzle here and there today.
If we set it at 10.5, would you be an over or an under?
10.5 for the winning score?
Yep.
I would say over.
Yeah.
I'd say 12. If I had to pick a winning score right now, I'd say 12.
Yeah, it's not going to be 16.
No.
And you know, and they're not going to back up that far. So,
no, you know. In talking to the head professional, Scott Davenport, it looks like they're going to try and dial these greens up a little bit, if you will, for the weekend by getting some of the moisture out of them, if possible, overnight with the sub-airs. And
yeah,
that's going to affect scoring.
Well, and speaking of Scott, because we talked about it with him, and I want to talk to you about the move of the date back to May.
Uh-huh.
But before that, how special is it for this event to continue having these 20 PGA playing professionals, just like Todd, in the field, and the reaction and the interaction between they and the current touring pros? I mean, what's the vibe around that? It just seems like an amazingly special thing.
It really is. You know, I remember Brent Snedeker sent out a tweet after the PPC back in June saying how he couldn't wait to welcome them to the PGA Championship. You know, most of these professionals who play the tour had a PGA professional somewhere in their life early on, introduce them to the game. Many of them still, they have a teacher who's a PGA professional, and I think that respect and that relationship is one of the things that binds the club pros in this tournament to the tour professionals in the industry. And for us, it's a great platform for those 20 professionals to represent Todd and myself and the 29,000 men and women that are teaching the game, running golf shops, growing the game every day. And in that representation, show the world kind of what a PGA professional does, and one of the most important things they do is they play the game at a high level.
Yeah, I mean, and really showcase the talents that
they
have. And again, that feeds quite nicely into the next topic. We're talking to Paul Levy, the president of the PGA of America. A big impetus behind moving to May is to sort of take advantage of the surge that you get, and it makes sense through the summer as opposed to right now we're getting ready to go back to school and football and all that other stuff. Tell us a little bit more about, take us into the room. When that decision was cultivated over the last few years, what were the sticking points? What were the motivations? Take us where we can't go.
Well, that particular decision's one that we made over a three-year-plus period. We had many discussions, and what started the discussion was the Olympics, the date change that was needed in every 4 years because of the Olympics, with the first one being 2016. As you know, we played last year at Baltusrol in July for the first time in quite some time. So we felt that we had to do something with the date that would solidify our championship always being on the same date like all majors have been and like the PGA Championship has been. Also, we looked at every aspect of how it would affect TV. How would it be seen by viewers? Would that affect ratings, which is important? We also looked at it from a standpoint of what would it mean for our stature as a major. But one of the key things is what you mentioned. It allows us a ramp-up time. It allows us and our relationship with the tour. The tour is marketing our programs in March and in April on television, and allows us to ramp up to a May PGA Championship, promoting Junior League Golf. Get golf ready. Go see your local PGA golf professional, and then taking advantage of that run all summer versus that ramp up happening at the end of the season, as you noted. So that was a major part of it. But when it was all said and done, the decision was made because we felt it was what is in the best interest of the championship and the men and women members of the PGA of America.
Well, and what role did potential weather and course conditions play when you look at geography and things like that? Yeah, there's two sides to that argument. I mean, they don't play in a dome, and having imperfect conditions is part of the game.
Well, this is an outdoor sport, so you deal with that. But the conditions, what golf courses, what courses do we have under contract for future PGA championships? What would this mean to future sites and locations? That was a critical component of the analysis. Although when you make the decision, it's like anything. You have these 10 or 15 considerations. You look at them, you put it aside, and you make the decision that's best. And I think even though people might say, oh, gosh, so does that mean you won't be able to go here or do that? You know, nothing's impossible with grasses these days
right.
and different locations. But it does open up, I think, the most important aspect of it. It opens up parts of the country that we could have never gone to for a PGA championship. You know, in Florida and Texas and, you know, where I live in Southern California, and you look at, the desert area. You look at areas in Phoenix, Scottsdale. So we think it's a win-win, and we think when it's all said and done, as we move forward, you know, we're turning the page after 2018, where we will be at Belrive in August to start the new chapter of the PGA Championship, being in May, in 2019 at Bethpage.
Will it have any effect on how the TPC, the players, is viewed in its, you know, its quest to be the quote-unquote fifth major? That's a weird one.
I think the players being moved to March sets up the whole golf season, and the tour did that, looking at the landscape of the professional golf. You know, I'm not in a position to comment what that means for
right.
what their tournament will be positioned. You know, the Players' Championship is a great championship, and by moving it back to March where it was, it sets up the whole flow for the golf season of April, Masters, May, US, June, U.S. Open, July, British Open, and then, of course, as we get to August, the FedEx playoffs, and then in September every year, you've got a President's Cup or a Ryder Cup. So it does create a nice flow for the season.
And by using the Olympics as part of the impetus, I mean, that is a clear show of support for by the PGA for the Olympic golf movement, correct?
There's no doubt. In fact, Pete Bavacqua, our CEO, is the chairman for the federation. So when it's all said and done, we have greatly said we support the Olympics by doing this.
Yeah. Mark, what you got?
Well, and, you know, just to kind of piggyback on the point with weather, I mean, obviously you can start looking at even venues that give you different kind of weather, you know, because in Charlotte, we've talked about this before, in Charlotte, I mean, in August, obviously we can see we have pop-up thunderstorms, mid-80 temperatures, but we can have that in May as well. But, you know, again, you start opening up some of these other venues, and when you start looking at golf courses, and we always talk about this, you know, whether it's the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, the PGA, I mean, do you guys look at a rotation of some sort, or are you looking at classic golf courses that have hosted a PGA championship before or a major championship before, and it seems like you guys are sprinkling in new courses here or there? Is that how do you guys come up with your future venues? At this point, we're through 2023.
Well, you kind of touched base on a couple things that are accurate, but it's not like there's one written plan. Let me explain that. We want to go to the best championship golf courses that are going to elevate this championship and continue to keep the PGA championship as one of the top events in the world. Number two, yes, you see a trend where we're going back to some courses that we've had success with. Southern Hills, you know, Hazeltine, we had the Ryder Cup, we've had PGA championships there. You know, Oak Hills in Rochester, New York. Valhalla in Kentucky. So yes, we do have a mindset that there are certain sites that we know have held up well for a PGA championship, where the market, the city that they're in, does well with all the things that come with hosting an event, hospitality, crowds, excitement. And you'll continue to see, I think, a trend of us having golf courses that are major venues that we like going to, but that doesn't mean we won't be adding new courses along the way.
Yeah, I'm curious, what role does the ability to customize the course, lengthen a course, play in making those decisions? Because there's some old classic courses that just are stymied by, you know, you can't make them longer.
Well,
but you can always make them a little bit harder, but you can't make them longer.
Well, there's two issues there. There's the golf course itself and length, hard, not hard, championship quality of playing the course. And then there's the need for course setup. Mm. For you look out here, there's 300 structures that are, you know, you build a tent city, you build all these structures. Look, you know, here, the media center.
I know. The shop is 40,000 square feet or whatever.
So you've got two issues. You've got to be able to have the geography, the acreage, and the course setup so that you can put in all those structures. And then, yes, championship-wise, you know, some golf courses are never going to be much longer than they are today, which, let's face it, as we know as golf professionals, you know, the average person who plays golf, which is most golf courses are there for the customer who plays golf, they don't need to have a 7,500-yard
right.
golf course. You know, some of these golf courses have been lengthened over time, knowing that they're going to be venues where major championships are, and, you know, that's one of the things about today's golf. I mean, how far the ball goes, how far players hit it, and that does affect, in some ways, the ability of some of the older courses' ability to host a PGA Tour or a major championship.
Now, do you think the call for some 9,000 or 10,000-yard course is just crazy talk?
I hope it never gets to that point.
Me too.
I would hope that we have seen the extent of the distance race, so to speak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it has to tie into equipment as well. I mean, so can we figure out how to cap that, some of that technology? And
it's going to happen eventually. I mean, the golf ball is doing things now that, you know, I hit the ball longer now than I did 20 years ago when I was in college. It's the equipment, the golf ball. You know, eventually the governing bodies are going to have to look even more at those types of things. Going back to the venues, Mr. Levy, I want to discuss growing the game, because how much does growing the game, which is obviously is a major goal of the PGA of America, how much does that go into choosing venues? Because obviously we want to keep the PGA Championship as one of the top golf tournaments in the world, but how much does growing the game go into where geographically that tournament is played?
Well, when you say growing the game, I think that we look at overall markets that will sustain a PGA Championship, where we can activate. What does that mean? What can we do? I mean, this past Sunday, we had the PGA Hope, Help Our Patriots Everywhere Secretary Cup at Charlotte Country Club. So all of that goes into the framework or the makeup, so to speak, of where should a PGA championship go. And I think when you come to a market like Charlotte, where lots of great golf professionals, golf facilities, a town that's golf crazy like Charlotte, you know, that helps a lot.
Well, Paul, we really appreciate you coming on with us, and we look forward to a great weekend of golf here at the PGA Championship, and we look forward to future events and hopefully having one back in Charlotte soon.
Well, we would love to come back to Charlotte, and thank you for your hospitality, and keep doing what you do to promote this game.